we're all going to come out of it. We've come out of everything that's ever happened to us. Think of this. Everything that's ever happened to you, you've survived. You wouldn't be here now if you hadn't. And so when you're my age at 75, you know, I've survived the Vietnam War. I survived the, you know, three major recessions, 9/11, et cetera. And it always, the stock market always bounces back. Businesses always start up again. People always get work again.
This is the podcast for people that believe they do not need to change the world. We believe it's all about becoming the most effective version of yourself in the moments in life that matter the most. This is
the Inner Changemaker Podcast. Instead of changing the world, change their world. Hey, what's going on? Jay Wong here. Wanted to quickly intro this interview before we dive right into the conversation. My guest today is no other than Mr. Jack Canfield. He is known as America's number one success coach. This is a man who has co-authored more than 200 books. He is the man or one of the partners behind Chicken Soup of the Soul, which is a massive, massive empire. I know has made a big difference to me growing up. I don't know about you, but certainly those books were kicking around in my house and my parents are gifting those as little birthday gifts and things like that. But it has actually sold more than 500 million copies. That's right. 500 million copies. It includes, I think, like 40 plus New York bestsellers. It's, you know, in 47 different languages. It's absolutely amazing. And he's also written an amazing book called The Success Principles. And we're here talking about his new book, The Success Principles Workbook, which we actually bring you to work. And we actually tell you how to actually implement not just the principles themselves, but what kind of difference it can make for you as a leader. So whether you are a solopreneur, whether you are an entrepreneur, whether you are a business owner, whether you are a thought leader, whether you don't even have a business, I think you're going to get so much out of this interview because Jack and I, we dive pretty deep in not only like law of attraction or not only like limiting beliefs, but his stories, his examples, I think is more relevant now, especially in the times that we're living in, and especially in times of crisis and global pandemics. I think his message resonates even on a deeper level. He shares some amazing examples, and he is somebody that I not only admire because he's dedicated so much of his career into the field of personal development and helping leaders become the best version of themselves, but he is somebody that actually does the work, right? So you're going to hear that in parts of the interviews, and you might have seen clips of it already. You might be listening to this on the podcast, but wherever you are checking this out, make sure to hit subscribe. Make sure to not miss out on the gems that come from Mr. Jack Canfield, and make sure to go check out and pick up a copy of his new book, The Success Principles Workbook. We're going to link to everything in either the show notes or in the comment section down below. I would love to hear your thoughts and feedback after watching the interview. I won't hold you back any further. Let me get out of your way. And here is the interview with Jack Canfield. You know, I really want to dive right in because you've co-authored so many different books, over 200 books. Chicken Soup for the Soul has sold over 500 million books in 40 plus, you know, languages. And we're obviously here to talk about your Success Principles workbook. But take us back a little bit in terms of what was like life like before you co-authored all these books? Like, who was Jack before the 200 plus co-authorizations?
Well, I started my career as a high school teacher in Chicago, and it was an all-black high school. And I very quickly became more interested in why my kids weren't motivated to learn than I was in teaching history. So I met a man named W. Clement Stone, who was a friend of Napoleon Hill. Excuse me. And Napoleon Hill, and he had written a book called The Success System and Never Fails. And I started working with him and applying what I was learning from him in my classes. And my kids started really doing well to the point that my principal asked me to start teaching the other teachers how to build these kids' self-esteem, how to teach them goals and so forth. And eventually I became a teacher trainer. I was running all around the Midwest in Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, et cetera, teaching workshops on building self-esteem in kids in the classroom. And then I moved to LA. I was doing that for a while. And then what happened was a recession, the first Gulf War in 1993, and all the education money dried up. And so I was like, oh God, what do I do now? And so I started running public seminars with the same things. I didn't really know if I could work with adults that weren't educators until this one principal said, go over and work with my husband's company. They need what you're teaching. I said, I never worked in a company before except as a floor sweeper in a General Electric plant between college and graduate school. She said, they're just big kids in suits. Now go over and work with them. And so I did. And it went really, really well. So I realized I could do seminars for adults that weren't educators. And as that was happening, people started asking me, the story you told about the puppy, is that in the book anywhere? Story about the Girl Scout who sold 3,000 boxes of Girl Scout cookies, is that in the book anywhere? And I always had to say no. And then one day I was flying back from Boston to LA and I went like, oh, wow, the universe is telling me I should put all these stories in a book. So that's what happened with that created the first Chicken Soup for the Soul book. And then, as you know, I put, this is really interesting, at the back of the book, most books are published in folios of 16 pages, meaning they print these big things, fold them over a lot, and you get 16 pages, and they sew them or glue them all together. And my publisher called and said, you got four blank pages at the end of the book. Do you want to write anything there? And I said, sure, let's put, if you have a story, send it in. Maybe we'll do a sequel. Well, that was about 250 books ago. If that page hadn't gone in there, we probably wouldn't be talking right now. But that changed my life. And so we just started doing Chicken Soup book after Chicken Soup book until there were so many of them. And then I was in bed one Sunday and my son said, Dad, why is our house bigger than everyone else I know's house? And I said, well, we have more money. Well, why? How did we make it? And I started thinking about what were the principles that I'd live my life by that allowed me to be so super successful. And that's what was the beginning of the Success Principles book. And then I went on to interview 75 of the most successful people, movie stars, generals, CEOs, top salespeople, Olympic and professional athletes, to make sure that the principles I was writing about weren't just idiosyncratic to me, but they were the principles that were universal, that if anyone applied them, they could become more successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it must be, I imagine, pretty amazing from your vantage point, because, you know, you just do a quick Google search online, there's so many people that have been impacted, that have found and grasped, you know, a certain principle, that have applied it in their business, in their life, in their career, right? So, you know, I always love to kind of, you know, ask, like, how does it feel for you knowing that, like, I mean, your body of work, like that, it's a massive legacy. We've interviewed some amazing, you know, people and thought leaders, right? A few of them are, you know, everybody's hyper successful in that sense, but I don't know if we've ever had anybody on that's co-authored, you know, 200 plus books and has sold that many copies of especially like a whole genre of books. So right. How does that land for you now, seeing almost like the ripple effect, right? Of what you started.
The truth is, I don't think about it much any more than you do. You get up in the morning, you've got things to do, and you do them. And so, you know, right now I'm developing two new courses. I'm writing two new books. I'm spending time with my wife sequestered in our home because of the COVID-19 pandemic. I talk to my kids, my grandson, and it's like every once in a while I look at all the books on the bookshelf that I've written. You know, there's like a whole wall. And then the translations, I couldn't even keep them all in my office. But the reality is that when I do that, or like when I spent a month in India, all of February I was in India, most of it just my wife and I were doing some longevity things, some consciousness things, but I met with some of my students over there. I walked into this one hotel and there were like 40 people all throwing rose petals on me. And I mean, it was ridiculous. And then I realized, you know, all these people said their life had absolutely changed because of me, and they were running workshops for other people in prisons and things like that. One evening I think about it, I go, oh my God, I really have done a lot. But most of the time it's not something that even enters my thinking.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And you know, you mentioned kind of like what's going on in the world. And I know we chatted just a little bit off record around it. I mean, this whole show is dedicated to what we call change makers, right? But really they're leaders, like leaders mm-hmm. of their business, leaders in their family, right? Leaders of, you know, what's going on. With everything that's going on in the world right now, what have you found that, I mean, you kind of like hinted at it a little bit, but I'm kind of curious, what have you found that, you know, really successful individuals, they themselves that have almost integrated those principles, right? That it comes second nature to them. What are the things that they're practicing? Like it's critical for them to practice in a time like this, where, you know, the world seems like it's, you know, filled with, you know, fear and overwhelm. And, you know, every single time, it just seems like there's worse news,
Well, one of the things I teach is that fear is all self-created by imagining things that haven't happened yet. So, you know, if you're afraid you're going to lose your home, if you're afraid you're going to, your business is going to go under, if you're afraid you're not going to be able to make your mortgage payment, whatever, that's all something that hasn't happened yet. You know, so all of my students know that acronym that I'm sure you've heard 1,000 times, fear is fantasized experiences appearing real. So even if there was a rattlesnake in your room kind of slithering toward you, right now, before anything happens, you're safe. You're fine. Nothing's happened yet. You have to go into the future and imagine it's going to bite you in order to have fear. Then imagine you're probably going to die or something. So it's that imagination, instead of being in the present moment. You know, I'm sure you've interviewed people about mindfulness, and mindfulness is being in the present moment, noticing exactly what's going on in your body, in your environment. And right now, pretty much everyone listening to this has food in the refrigerator and in their pantry. They're healthy. They don't have COVID-19. They probably 90% of the people, they don't have COVID-19. And so the reality is we're doing just fine. And so given that, so the main thing you have to do, first of all, is manage your own thoughts, manage your own vibration. We know, for example, that when you get into worry and fear, you're producing all kinds of biochemicals in your body that actually weaken your immune system. So the best thing you can do to stay healthy is to be in a state of joy, positive expectation, peace, and love and compassion. And so the students that I'm talking to, and I'm talking to my students quite regularly right now with podcasts and webinars and emails and so forth, is, you know, manage your own consciousness, your own emotional state. You know, state management is critical right now. And so things like meditation, things like visualization at the end of this, like this will not last forever. Whether it lasts for 3 weeks, 3 months, or a year, we're all going to come out of it. We've come out of everything that's ever happened to us. Think of this, everything that's ever happened to you, you've survived. You wouldn't be here now if you hadn't. And so when you're my age at 75, you know, I've survived the Vietnam War. I survived the, you know, 3 major recessions, 9/11, et cetera. And it always, the stock market always bounces back. Businesses always start up again. People always get work again. You know, we're in our lowest rate of unemployment, and that'll happen again probably within months of coming out, because there's going to be just as many people with just as many needs, just as much food and things that need to be distributed, manufactured, and delivered, and so forth. So we're in a, I think we're like in a pause. You know, we have that little pause button on our remote control for our TV. So we're not doing the things we normally do. The second thing you have to do is figure out, how do you keep yourself productive and not fighting with your roommate, your spouse, your dog, whatever it might be that's not normally spending time with you? Or if you're home working and your kids are there and you're not used to working at home, you got to resolve all that. And then the third thing is your business. You know, how can you pivot your business? Now, a lot of people listening to this podcast are working online. So those of us who are working online, whether we're doing podcasts or delivering online courses or doing one-to-one coaching on Zoom or whatever it might be, We're fine, really. In fact, we're many people I know. I've talked to 5 people just in the last couple of days who are doing better. People that are doing multi-level marketing, that are selling essential oils and house cleaning things, and some of them have hand sanitizers you can't get at, you know, at the supermarket because it's an MLM. And one of them's up 33% over last year. Lisa Nichols, who you probably know, is up about 40% over last year at the same time. Many of us, including me, have taken some of our best courses, and we're offering them online for either, like, you know, 5 copays or 1/3 the cost. We just took a program we have called Yelp, which is Your Extraordinary Living Plan. And it's a one-day seminar that I did. And normally it's $147. We made it available for $47. We sold about 200 of them yesterday. You know, so if you can find a way to be of service and still monetize it in some way, or just be of service. I've told a lot of my students, look, if you come out of this having built your mailing list because you were a good guy and you were giving away good things that people could use, and your mailing list was growing and you carried some kind of viral stuff that was useful to people, that's a win. You know, if you come out where everyone thinks you're amazing and they want to do more work with you, I started doing free webinars and seminars, you know, a few days into this. And it's been very, very successful for us. And I know it's been successful for a lot of people. One of my friends, Colin Sprake up in Vancouver, is doing a 5-day series called a 6-day masterclass to survive as a company. And he was showing how, you know, a lot of restaurants have closed their doors. One restaurant decided within one day he ordered 1,000 takeout boxes, opened up, you know, his restaurant to coming by at 6:30, 7:30, and 8 and 8:30 pickup times. He sold 60 takeout dinners that night. Normally, he only sells 40 dinners when he's open. So basically, you know, it was an immediate pivot. A guy who is, I just got an email yesterday from a skin doctor who's saying, right now, you can't come into my office. I can't come to you. But if you go online, I'll look at your face. You'll tell me what symptoms you're dealing with. Maybe you want to get rid of splotches on your face. You're dealing with acne. You'd like to some wrinkle cream, whatever. And I'll make sure that gets to you. Pharmacies are open. I'll do a prescription. And she's doing well right now. So you've got to like get out of fear into creativity, because fear takes you into the back of your brain, your amygdala. And then it hijacks your prefrontal cortex. And your prefrontal cortex is where your creative ideas are. It's where your rational thinking is. It's where spirituality comes in. So it's really critical that we do everything we can to stay out of fear and then ask yourself the question, what can I do? And I would recommend, I've probably watched 20 other people's podcasts and read 100 articles since this has all started. And every one of them, I get one or two ideas. Really, I should do chicken soup for the quarantine soul. I could come up with a whole new book before this is over.
Exactly. We're going to get that trademarked from this recording here.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, I think it also drives home the point of the, you know, almost like the law of attraction, right? Yes. It's almost like what you focus on expands, right? Yes. In very simple terms, right? And every example that you're giving, these are leaders and entrepreneurs. Lisa Nichols, actually one of the most, you know, she was on the podcast, most downloaded, you know, top 3 or 5, I think, most downloaded episodes on the show. Right. But you know, it's amazing because you're talking about what they're focusing on too, yes. Right? They're focusing on the opportunity. They're focusing on, hey, what are the offers we have, right? That we could serve people. How can we serve people? Yeah. Right? And these are just such better questions than to get lost in, you know, being reactive to the news or Twitter or what have you.
Well, I think, you know, this kind of a crisis actually determines what kind of leader you are. We always talk about service leadership, you know, and if you're coming from service, you're always asking the question, how can I serve more people more fully? And Deepak Chopra taught me that question years ago. He said, every morning I wake up and I simply ask God to show me how to serve more people more fully. If you serve more people every day and you serve them more fully every day, you're going to be very, very successful. You know, someone said, if you focus on money, you'll have money to count. But if you focus on, If you focus on serving people, you'll have countless money, something like that. But the idea being that if you were coming from service before, you're going to be simply asking yourself, how can I serve more? If you've been coming from, how can I make money? You're only going to be coming from, how can I make more money? I saw yesterday there's an auction in Texas where they're selling face masks online. And charging $170 for 16 face masks. That's over $10 a face mask when face masks cost 14 cents normally in the open market. So people that are only going, oh, well, how can I take advantage of this? I think it's a little bit disgusting from my point of view. I'm not going to judge it beyond that. But the point being that we need to move these things around to the people who need them and not be thinking about how can I make a fortune, you know. There's going to be ways to make money. There are going to be distressed properties that are available, distressed stocks that are available if you really want to go there. But generally, it's really about how can I serve more?
Yeah. You know, it's, I'd love to share something with you, which is, you know, I run a podcast agency. I know we chatted just a little bit off record. And one of the first things we did when this was about 10 days, it seems like it was just yesterday, but really it's been so much. We reached out to every active podcast or person that we've engaged with or worked with or student of ours and said, hey, look, we have a whole production team ready to go. And we discussed it with everybody. But we would love for you as a thought leader, as somebody that has a bit of an audience, have a platform to create a message right now for, you know, if you're in real estate,
you know. Keep going. I lost your audio there for a minute.
Okay.
I got you again.
Let's say you're in real estate, right? Don't necessarily, I mean, you can address the pandemic, but talk about, you know, how does it relate with realtors or investors or mortgages, right? You know, how can, you know, and in the frame of mind, my team and I became, because truth be told, we just haven't gone through, we just have not gone through an entire crisis yet. We've read about them, right? I consciously understand, you know, I understand it, right? But when it did hit so many of, you know, I was fortunate to be around some great coaches and mentors of having that underlying value of, hey, how can we serve and take our superpower, right? And being able to help, you know, our thought leaders produce great content for their communities right now, because leadership is, it's almost needed at a time like this.
Totally.
Right? It's being called forth, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're doing the right thing. And, you know, I just, your real estate mention just reminded me of a story. I was talking to some realtors a few days ago, and there was this one woman up in the Silicon Valley area who was trying to figure out, how do I get into this market and become a successful realtor? And so what she did is she offered free classes on Saturdays for women who were single or divorced or single moms on how to buy your first home. And so mm-hmm. she was educating them on how you go about that. How do you get a mortgage? How much do you have to have? How do you approach the banks? Blah, blah, blah. And within the next 3 years, almost every one of those classes bought a house. And guess who they bought it from? Well, they bought it from her, because she educated them. So one of the things everybody can be doing right now is educating people. You know, I know some hairstylists who are running classes online now about how to cut your kids' hair, how to cut your husband's hair, how to cut your daughter's hair. And so again, they're keeping their client base engaged. They're giving them service. So when this is all over, that's the word they're going to go back to, because they've built a creative, positive bonding with those people. And so there's a lot we can do if we just ask ourselves again the question, you know, how can I be of service?
Mm-hmm. You know, one of, as I reflected, kind of, you know, thinking back to whenever I first read The Success Principles, right? Because, mm-hmm. You know, I found it really interesting. You guys came out of a workbook, or you're releasing, by the time they view this, right, or hear this, you can actually go get the workbook, right?
Right.
I think it's at the successprinciplesworkbook.com. And we're going to link to everything, obviously, right, in the show notes.
I'll show you a copy of it here, which we just
nice.
Got. That's a really good.
Yeah.
But yeah. What happened was, I've learned always that when people would come and take a live seminar with me, work with one of our coaches, they would have incredible success. Many of the people that read the book have had success if they actually do what's in the book. There's a guy named John Caleb in the Philippines who I met when I was over in Manila, came and interviewed me the night before I was doing a one-day workshop. At the end of the interview, I said, John, that's one of the best interviews I've ever had. And he said, well, thank you. I said, how long have you been doing this? He said, you're my first interview. And I said, wait a second. I said, well, what were you doing before that? And he had a restaurant that had gone bankrupt due to a whole bunch of issues. And he was couch surfing. He didn't have an apartment. He didn't have a car. A friend dropped him off. I said, John, how much money do you have to your name? He said, about $2.40. I gave him a $20 bill. And I said, go buy dinner on me, because I'm wealthy and I can afford it. And then I had to buy a copy of my book from the bookstore to give to him, because I didn't have one of my own in the Philippines. And I said, come to my workshop tomorrow as my guest. So he came. I came back to Manila 2.5 years later. In walks John. I recognized him. He's wearing a blue blazer with a big medallion on it, like, you know, gold medallion. There were about 12 people all in the same. They had blue polo shirts on with the same medallion, like this entourage. Turns out John had become the number one motivational speaker in the Philippines, had never been a speaker before that. He was averaging 1,000 people at his workshops. He had his own radio show, and he was now worth over $1 million. He had several condos and cars, and I mean, really nice cars, like, you know, Bugattis yeah. and things. And I said, John, what happened? He said, I read your book. I said, well, that's good. Then I did everything in it. I said, John, I don't know anyone who's done everything in that book. There's 64 principles. He said, well, I did. And so I know that if you do what's in the book, you can double, triple your income in a couple years, maybe 1 year. Some people do it in 6 months. But the reality is, most people don't do what's in a book. They read it, they're inspired by it, they think it's cool, but they don't do it. So I said, okay, we need a workbook that is a coach between the covers of a book, that if people can't afford coaching, or they don't want to take the time to commit to an ongoing coaching program, or they don't want to come to one of our longer trainings, they can go through the book either alone or with a partner and actually have the results. So we wrote the workbook, beta tested it with a group of about 30 people, just gave them the book, said, do what's in there. We're going to get back in touch with you. And there's 17 principles in the book that we go deep dive into, with worksheets and habit development processes and all this kind of stuff. And so we got back with people about 4 months later, and everybody was doing really, really well. So we made sure that actually worked as a book. And now we're releasing it to the general public. We're really excited about it.
Yeah, no. And when I first saw that, I thought, this is actually perfect. It's one of the most perfect, you know, one of the principles that really resonated with me. And I think really just resonates with a lot of leaders on their journey of becoming their kind of best version of leadership and trying to figure out, you know, the different levels for themselves, which is take ownership one, right? Take massive responsibility, take massive ownership over, you know, what's happening in one's life, right? And when I saw the workbook, I thought, oh, this is so great because you're giving them an opportunity to practice, right? One of the principles that you guys talk so deeply about.
Yeah, that's the first chapter, both in the book and in the workbook. So I'll take 100% responsibility for your life and your results. And if you don't take 100%, you're always going to be blaming someone, complaining about someone, or making an excuse about why you didn't get what you want. And the fact is that every outcome you're currently experiencing, meaning your wealth, your health, the quality of your relationships, how happy you are, et cetera, are all the result of how you responded to an earlier event. So right now we're in this event called COVID-19. And what happens is how we respond to this, both with our mind and our emotions and our behavior and what we say and do, is going to affect the outcomes we're going to be experiencing 3 months from now, a year from now, whatever. And also it will control how you're experiencing life in the present moment. So there's a formula in that first chapter called E plus R equals O. It says event plus response equals outcome. And right now, if you're happy, that's an outcome of the thoughts you're thinking in relation to what is. Some people are thinking negative thoughts and they're getting stressed, they're worried, they're unhappy, they're fighting with their wife, whatever, as opposed to people that are thinking positive thoughts, that are focusing on what they can do, focusing on a positive future, meditating, being happy, et cetera, all the things we talked about. And they're experiencing feeling joy, feeling comfortable, feeling less stressed, maybe not, you know, they're sleeping better at night, et cetera. So anytime you're not experiencing what you want, you have to ask yourself, how am I responding to the way the world is? And what's really interesting, E plus R equals O is 2 + 2 = 4. And if you're happy with 4, great. If you're not happy with 4 and you want 5, you can't keep doing 2 if the world's doing 2. It just doesn't work. You've got to get more creative. You have to learn new skills, new things you can do, new ways to be. And unfortunately, right now, the world decided to do 1. So now 1 + 2 = 3. And so we've got to do 2 extra if we want to be successful. So it is possible. And, you know, you got to give up the blame game. We have a wonderful exercise in that first chapter called Difficult and Troubling Experiences, where you ask yourself, what is a difficult or troubling experience in my life? You know, maybe I'm not getting along with my sister. Maybe I'm sick. Maybe I don't have any money, whatever it is. And then you ask the question, how am I creating that? And you know, people, well, what do you mean, how am I creating that? You know, well, what are you doing? What are you not paying attention to? What are you ignoring? You know, I had a guy in a workshop once. He said his big complaint was his apartment had been robbed 3 times in 5 months. And I said, where do you live? He said, New York City. I said, in an apartment? He said, yeah. I said, what floor? He said, first floor. I said, do you have bars on the window? No. Do you have triple locks on the door? No. So my next question was, what are you pretending not to know? And he said, I don't know. I said, you're pretending not to know that you live in a first floor apartment in New York City. You know, it's like, those are the things that get robbed the most. The next question is, what would you rather have? You know, I'd rather have this, called people not stealing my stuff. You know, what would you have to do to get that? Why are you not getting that? And the why you're not getting that is because you're not willing to go and be uncomfortable enough to spend the money to put the bars on, you know, the inconvenience of staying home for a day when the people come. So basically, you know, you get really clear about what's not working in your life and how you are responsible for it. We also look at who you're blaming, what complaints do you have. Complaint is simply a reference point. Think about this. If I'm complaining about my wife, let's say I'm watching the Super Bowl and my wife comes in and says, honey, what are you doing there? You're eating Cheetos, you're drinking beer, and you're getting fat. And all those people on TV, they're making millions of dollars and they're unhealthy, they're wealthy, you know. And so I could go, like, I could come to work and say, Jay, you wouldn't believe my wife, man. She is a food Nazi. She is on my case all the time. And, you know, and I get a lot of commiseration. You go, man, I understand, Jack. I know women like that, whatever. Now, does that change anything? Absolutely not. You know,
nope.
Now here's the deal. In order to complain, I have to believe that somewhere on the planet, there's a better woman that would come in and go, oh, honey, do you want me to make you some more nachos and get you another beer? You know, and there is that woman. So the reality is, if I have a complaint, it means I know there's something better that I'm not willing to risk creating, because I'd have to confront my wife and say, honey, you're not the boss of my body, as most little kids tell their parents, you know, leave me alone. Yeah, yeah. Or I'd have to go find another woman, which means I'd have to get divorced, split my money in half, and go find this other person who may or may not have other problems. Because I know for this, if tomorrow morning every woman on the planet died from COVID-19, except my wife, the only woman left, would I come to work and complain about her? No, there's no other option. There's no other woman available. So we wouldn't complain. Nobody complains about gravity. Oh, gravity, I wouldn't be all bent over like this if it wasn't for gravity. No one complains because gravity's not an option unless you're an astronaut. And so basically we just, and I take you through all these things with complaining and blaming and, you know, excuse making, et cetera. So you really get it. And there's exercises where you write answers to questions and you do things and so forth so that it Velcros. The biggest problem is all this new information. We've all read books and 6 weeks later, we can't remember anything in it because it just went in one ear, not the other. So we want things that will Velcro this to us. So it becomes just like your telephone number. It becomes something you intuitively know all the time without having to think about it.
Mm. So make sure to go pick up a copy of that workbook, because obviously if you need to be able to not just understand the content, right, but we got to integrate that, you know, make sure we actually go through the exercises and be able to do that. You know, Jack, I know, you know, it's almost like you've memorized the book. I imagine at this point you've had so many interviews on it, so many different, you know, thoughts and people expanding on, you know, different principles. For you, from your observation, you know, out of all the hundreds and thousands of people that have kind of worked with you and seen you, is there kind of one or two principle that people know it's like the right thing to do? They want to be able to do it, right? But some, for whatever reason, they just find it difficult to be able to like integrate that. Or is that different for everybody?
I think the biggest thing for most people that stops people from being successful is the limiting beliefs that are unconscious, they don't even know they have, that keep them from taking the actions they need to take. So if you look at the model, it says take 100% responsibility for your life, be clear why you're here, clarify your life purpose, because Stephen Covey said it really beautifully. He said, you don't want to get to the top of the ladder and realize the ladder was leaning against the wrong wall. So a lot of people get what they think they want, which is money, fame, and fortune, but they don't actually get fulfillment and happiness because they never really figured out what is their life purpose. My life purpose is to inspire and empower people to live their highest vision in a context of love and joy. When I am doing that, everything works. When I'm not doing that, my life just goes on, it goes kablooey. I've tried to go into other kind of things, but that was not my purpose. Then you have to decide, what does my ideal life look like? Turn that into specific measurable goals. Most people get that far when they do this work, get into this kind of work. But then most people don't do their affirmations and their visualizations on a daily basis. So you are reprogramming your subconscious mind. You've got to take action, which is what we're just talking about. You know, Tony Robbins once said, what's the one thing that most separates people from, you know, winners from losers? And it's winners take action. They're action oriented. And if you have beliefs, I'll give you an example. I had a woman who I was working with. A partner and I were writing a book called Unstuck, and we're working with people. And this woman was an Olympic level athlete. And when she would be in practice, she'd get these amazing times. And when she would compete, she'd never get the time she got in practice, which is the opposite of what normally happens for people. Usually do better in competition. And when we worked with her and took her back, in other words, we get people in touch with where are you stuck? Then we go through her body, we find out where is their blocked energy, and then we ride that energy back to the earliest time you can remember feeling that same feeling and blockage. And she went back to when she was about 10, and her mother was hiding her medals and her trophies and her ribbons when she would come home, whereas all of her friends' mothers would put them on the wall, put them on the bulletin board, stick them on shelves. And she said, Mom, why are you hiding all my medals and trophies and stuff? She said, well, because it makes your brother feel bad, because he never wins anything like that. So we don't want your brother to feel bad. Well, she imprinted when she was 10, when I succeed, it makes people I love feel bad. And so basically, every time she's competing, even though she's not aware of it, it's like subconscious down below her threshold of consciousness, she doesn't want to make her brother feel bad, her mother feel bad, et cetera. So she loses or doesn't succeed as well as she could. She doesn't win the medals. And so what's happening is we all have these, I call them the emergency brakes. You don't know you have them, but you're driving with the emergency brake on. And so once we release those, then all of a sudden these things we were afraid to do or uncomfortable to do or just put off doing, we actually start doing them. So one of the keys is identifying what are your limiting beliefs. One of the things we're doing for anyone who goes to the successprinciplesworkbook.com and orders the book through there, and you get redirected to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, your choice. What happens is we're doing some free workshops. I'm doing this masterclass of me. I'm going to give my $35,000 keynote that I charge organizations for free online to anyone who wants to do that. I'm also going to do a couple of webinars where I will take people through that process that I just mentioned for free. I did it in January just as a gift before this really took off, that we weren't even worried about the coronavirus. What happened is I had over 2,000 people go through that process with me. We did it 3 days in a row, and we released, probably 5,000 limiting beliefs all across the world. And the feedback I'm getting from people is phenomenal. So I want people to let that go. It's kind of like you're operating with a hand pushing you down, and all of a sudden the hand's not pushing you down. If anyone's ever held a beach ball underwater, you let it go, it just pops up. So all these beliefs, they're holding us down. We let them go, we pop up, and our businesses pop up. We make more money. We have better relationships. We start doing the things that produce the successes in all the areas of our life that we really want.
And it's such a fascinating, first of all, I think it's absolutely amazing that you've gotten a chance to work with so many people in that way. And you probably have seen that, right? You've seen them kind of take off the emergency brake or the self-sabotage, right? And I know that in this podcast, we've chatted with, so many of the people that you probably already know anyways, around, financial set points, like money beliefs, like things like that. And those are always, those are always so revealing, right? And you kind of start figuring out, okay, there's a reason why, you could get to a certain point, but then you can't maybe overcome that. And sometimes it's a little more external, but a lot of times it goes back to that internal, I don't know if using wound maybe would be the right word, but
I think that is the right word. Yeah, wound, trauma. And we don't think of it as a trauma because maybe it was just our mother giving us a look, or maybe our dad not being there at our football games on a weekend, whatever it might be. But over time, what happens is, I'll say, if you got on a plane and you saw a six-year-old get on the plane, the six-year-old was going to be the pilot of the plane, you saw him walk in there, most of us will be a little nervous, not a lot of experience there. And yet most of us are walking around with a six or an eight-year-old running our lives. And so the reality is we have to grow that inner part up, as you will, and remove the blocks that are keeping us stuck. And I think that's the biggest obstacle. Most people that would listen to a podcast like this want to be successful. You don't invest time and energy and intention if you don't have that. The problem is that many of the things that are stopping, some it's called ignorance. One of the things I teach also is success is like knowing the combination to a lock. If you know the combination, the lock has to open. Doesn't matter if you're black, white, yellow, brown. Doesn't matter if you're old or young. I mean, we see these millionaires that are 14 years old now. The reality is that if you know the combination, the lock opens. The problem, if you're missing one number, I don't care how many times you turn that combination, lock won't open. You have them in the wrong order, it won't open. So a lot of people are missing key aspects. And I put those 17, what I think are the 17 key numbers out of the 64 that are in my other book, into this workbook. And if you do them in the order they are prescribed, don't jump ahead. Make sure you go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in that order. Within a few months, you can literally open the combination to success in any area of your life.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And we're going to link to all the different links down below, but it's www.thesuccessprinciplesworkbook.com. Jack, last couple questions for you. I'm kind of curious because we've had obviously this great conversation around, limiting beliefs and certain internal beliefs. For you, you've been in this work for decades. Do you remember, has there been any recent, internal shifts for you, even as somebody that teaches this work? Or do you even remember one kind of limiting belief that did make a massive difference for you?
I had a major breakthrough. I went down to Costa Rica and experienced plant medicine down at a place called Rythmia. And it was four nights of ingesting something called ayahuasca. And the reality was I got in touch with about three or four major childhood wounds that I was not conscious of. And here I am, 75. I've done more work on myself, therapy, workshops, guided visualization, 10-day meditation retreats, you name it. And I mean, 1 year I took 32 weekend workshops on everything you can possibly think you're about, you know, when I was in my 30s. But the point being that I got in touch with how my mother and my dad, when I would cry, they put me in the car and I just cry. Nobody would respond. So I gave up kind of asking for what I wanted because I didn't believe anyone was out there that would give it to me. So I really adapted the belief, wow, if I want something, I have to do it myself. So I have been much better at asking for support, reaching out to people. I had another wound where it was a worthiness issue where I thought I wasn't worthy of my father's support and love. And so a lot of my success has been driven by proving I'm worthy. And I dropped that. Now my success is, I was always a giver. I was always in the service. That was always there. But there was this little vine of ego wrapped around it called love me, tell me I'm enough. That's pretty much disappeared. And then the other big issue was I never cried. I shut down my crying when I was 10. My father was beating me. And I just said, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of seeing your impact on me. And I had never really cried since then. And boy, one night I just had to, it was like a battle. Cry, don't cry, cry, don't cry. It was like the Hulk, right, you know, and one of those superheroes.
Trying,
you know,
to break free or stay contained.
And I finally cried. I must have cried for like 20 minutes, tears of my mother's death and my own innocence lost as a child and people dying in the ghettos and, you know, on and on and on. And as everyone who knows me, who's known me before would say, you're not the same person. You showed up a lot more loving. You're a lot more patient. You're a lot more present with people. So I think, you know, I forget who it was that wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, his name, Richard Bach, I think it was. No, Richard, whatever it was. Anyway, whoever wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, that book.
Don't worry, we'll look it up.
Thank God we'll get for Wikipedia and online stuff. But anyway, he said, if you're still here, you know your work's not done yet, meaning your work on yourself. When you have fully evolved, you're not going to leave until, you know, you're not going to get to go until then. So basically, I'm very committed to continue growing. You know, I've read over 3,000 books. I continue to take seminars. I watch TED Talks and TEDx Talks and watched two podcasts last night that were I recorded yesterday when I was doing things like this. And I'm a voracious learner. And I think that's one of the things that keeps me young and alive and dynamic. So I would encourage people during this time of being sequestered in your homes, use this time, at least some of it. I teach what's called the hour of power, 20 minutes of reading, 20 minutes of meditation, 20 minutes of exercise. And don't tell me you don't have time to do that because you used to commute that much in your car or on the train or the subway. Now that's extra time. Yeah. So instead of just sleeping in, use it for reading books like this and listening to podcasts like Jay's and so forth.
Well, you know, I think it really does show. I mean, one of the things I did want to ask you, like, kind of point blank, because I saw that you were 75 and I thought, wow, that's absolutely amazing. Right. But then I was like, wait, Jack's been in the game for how many decades now? Right. And you're telling me he's coming up with a new book now as well. Like, that's incredible. Right. And then, you know, to see you even share some of those things that you just talked about, I mean, it's just a true definition of like a leader of like, hey, not just like consume the content, right? But hey, we're practicing it as well. And you're facing some of your own demons and your own wounds and you're also doing the work, you know? And yeah. I think it's very inspiring for other people that are watching this or listening to this to say, hey, you know what? Look, if Jack can learn a couple things in there, I could probably learn a couple things in there. I know I certainly can. So last question here to kind of wrap this up. You know, the show, it's called The Inner Changemaker. And I'd love to hear from your own words. Like, when you hear that word changemaker, any words or any images comes to your mind? And how would you kind of define somebody who says, hey, you know what? I'm a changemaker.
Well, I think change is always happening, whether we like it or not, but some changes need to happen. And I think if we can be the midwife to those changes, if we can be a, the word facilitator means to make easy, facile in Latin meant easy, facile. So basically, if we can facilitate, it's like a someone that facilitates a birth. The mother's going to do the work. But if the doctor or the nurse or the doula is there helping that person, you know, give birth, it is making it easier for you. That's why you learn Bradley or Lamaze or something like that, breathing technique, so you can facilitate it. And so a change maker to me is someone who's willing to stand on the front of the cusp of the changes that need to happen and be a leader, be someone who does the work to provide the products, the services, the consulting, the counseling, whatever it might be that's required to ease those changes. So, you know, I think what Shakespeare said, you can either walk through life on purpose or you can be dragged through life by circumstances. You know, my dad was someone who was totally out of touch with current reality. And then he had an automobile accident. And in that period of time, he kind of woke up to everything in his life that wasn't working. Now, had he been taking workshops and seminars and doing, you know, reading books like these, he wouldn't have had to maybe have that accident in order to wake him up. So, you know, someone once said, you know, discipline a little bit a day is better than having to do it all at once. So if we eat an alkaline diet and we drink enough water and we eat the right herbs and vitamins and we exercise and we get enough sleep, we don't need to get cancer in order to get our attention to start eating healthy. And so I think this the coronavirus right now is a wake-up call for a lot of us that the world we're living in isn't working, because all of a sudden we get to really, really take time to think about we are one world. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, black or white. You know, right now we're all in this together, and you know we're all in it together when Australia's forests are burning down. We're all in it together when the rainforest is burning down, when the ice caps are melting, when the species are going extinct. You know, so we're all kind of one humanity. You know, we were one country when 9/11 happened for about 2 weeks. Everyone was an American, you know, and it was very, very, very nice. Yeah. And we it kind of forgot about it after a while. But I don't think we're going to be able to forget about this one very soon. And all these change makers are now can facilitate the things that need to be brought into manifestation and the things that need to be perhaps taken out of manifestation that we all who are conscious, who are living conscious, intentional lives can do. So as you said earlier in the show, that it's all about stepping up and being the leaders that we are and acknowledging that this is the time. You know, this is what maybe all the work you've done has prepared you for this moment in time to be a calming and at the same time evolutionary leader.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you guys that are listening or watching this. Like, I'm watching Jack like doing his thing, and like I have goosebumps because, you know, I think it's you're a perfect like definition of that in so many ways, right? Facilitating it at so much of what you've done with your events and your students, you know. But I think you're so spot on. This is more of a revealing time than anything, right? And then for the ones that have been doing some of the work, you know what I mean? That, you know, you've had a few personal development books or you've done a few seminars, like now is the time to actually double down, you know, on those really, really great core skills. So Jack, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're doing this kind of virtual book tour with us, but I really appreciate you coming and sharing some of your wisdom. And I know I speak for so many of the people that are watching and listening. We're going to link to, you know, the Success Principles workbook. But thank you for your work and your words.
My pleasure, Jay. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to your community.
Have you been thinking of leveraging podcasts and Alexa shows to help grow your business? Not sure maybe where to start and scared of wasting time on the wrong things? Let me be your guide as I show you the right sequences and steps to be able to launch a top-rated show on iTunes, as well as actually leverage your podcast and leverage your Alexa show to build out your business. Don't you think it's time that you put your voice behind your products and services? If you were drawn to this show, then I know that it's time that you got working on your message and sharing that with the world. Get my podcast creation roadmap for free at www.theinnerchangemaker.com/roadmap. Once again, it's www.theinnerchangemaker.com/roadmap.